Welcome to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the success strategies of the 1% so you can amplify and transform your life and your business today. My next guest, I'm super excited about to have on the show just because he has a name that starts with Josh. He's been a real estate investor from Cleveland, Ohio since 2004. He has flipped over 685 properties in the past 10 years. Josh has raised so much private equity money or private money for his own business that he cannot use it all. So in 2014, he created his own private equity fund and direct funding called Freeland Ventures, where he funds deals for his members as well as clients and provides asset-based or property-based funding and no-money-down loans for residential and commercial deals. What I really appreciate about Josh is he's a practitioner. He takes action. He's actually doing the deals and funding deals every single day. He doesn't just show you and talk about it. Josh has funded well over 100-plus deals for his clients in just the past 18 months, resulting in over $5 million in profits and equity for his clients. I'm excited today. Josh has a very special story, something that's going to blow you away. He is also a pancreatic cancer survivor. Josh, I want to welcome you to Making Bank.
Hey, Josh, thanks so much for having me on. Been looking forward to this for a while. I appreciate you invite me to the show.
For sure, man. I know with our schedule so crazy and everything, we're both probably 20 minutes from each other, but we got to do it over Skype.
That's right. That's right. It works, though. It works for both of us. Like I said, I mean, I've been busting it today and spent some time with my son. He's back to preschool, and so it's just made it back in time to get this done, and so I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I know that was one of the key things I really keyed in with you on is just the whole fact of your connection and your integration with your family and what you're doing. And I know a lot of your life events have steered you in that direction even more and more over time. So tell me a little bit about how did you get started in real estate and, you know, where you are now?
Yeah, absolutely, Grosh. So when I got started with real estate, it was an interesting story. I was actually a financial advisor, and as a financial planner coming up, started as an intern in basically my junior year of college, right?
Okay.
But I noticed in my first 4, 5, 6 years in the financial planning business, I was very fortunate, basically just humping it, right? Working long hours, working late nights, working weekends, calling on clients. By the time I was 24, I was making 6-figure income, was really excited about that. But I realized that my top clients didn't have all their money in the stock markets. They had a lot of their money in real estate. They had a lot of money in multifamily. They owned restaurants. They owned buildings. They owned portfolios. So I took notice, bought my first investment property in 2001, and then just walked away from a 6-figure income in 2004. You know, I was 26, 27 years old and walked away from it and said, you know, I want to do real estate full time. Fast forward to today, over the last 12 years or so, I've been involved in about 700 flips for myself, with my brother, for my own account. We've also been involved in another 500 to 700 transactions. I used to own a real estate brokerage.
Okay.
And now we funded about 200 deals roughly in the past 2 years for our clients. So I've done nearly 1,500 real estate transactions, either as an investor, flipper, landlord, broker or lender since 2004. And today, my passion is all on the funding side of real estate, the private equity side and the funding side, funding my own deals with me and my brother, our business right here locally. We flip a lot of properties down right by where you live.
Awesome.
Where you're at and where I'm at. And I love that business, but I love the systems about it. But, you know, if I woke up every day and could spend all my time raising and deploying money, that would be ideal. I could do that 27 hours a day. So.
And I know you. I know you figured out a really great way to do it. You have a knack and a passion for it, and that's what's really exciting. And I know as entrepreneurs, either at some point or there's been times where we're like, man, I would love to raise some capital for my business and everything, or how do I grow my business to that next level without bringing on massive amounts of investors or going to get a bank loan or whatever that may be. So I'm excited to really dive in and learn a little bit more from you today on that. But first, I'd really like to touch on, I know you know, as you're building your business and you guys are crushing it and things are going real, really well for you, you had just an out of the blue, I guess, challenge that you encountered in your personal life.
That's right. Yeah, Josh. So it's an interesting thing. You know, I was 35 years old. I had, two little babies, two little girls, 2 and 1 years old. My wife was pregnant with our third child. I came home from work. I was kind of wrestling with my girls on the floor. I looked up at the ceiling. I kind of crossed my hands across my stomach, and I felt this giant lump in my belly.
Wow.
And I kind of went over to my wife. I said, "Hey, honey, come check this out." And she kind of started poking around. It's like, you know, it was only on the left side of my stomach, so I knew it was very strange.
Sure.
And I thought, you know, that can't be good. So, but my wife at the time was, you know, 7 months pregnant. So we kind of put that off. And there were also some challenges with my son when he was born. He actually had a lump in his throat.
Oh, wow.
So he had emergency surgery as well. So I kind of put off anything that had to do with me until after he was born. But he was born. He had surgery about 2 weeks after he was born. He made it through the surgery. And then I finally went and got checked out, and I got the diagnosis. It was almost about 5 years ago. I was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and anybody who knows about pancreatic cancer knows it has just a 7%
sure.
survival rate. Most people that say, "Oh, you know, I was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer," you know, they can't even believe that I'm standing there in front of them. It's such a rare case to survive, and so. You know, I was challenged, you know, like many entrepreneurs, you know, you kind of get your knees chopped off in business, and that's when you kind of learn the most about yourself and your character and how you've built your company. And I realized I had built my business all wrong because it was based so much on my own effort, my own hard work. I hadn't really leveraged up my business or brought on other people like I should have and trained them up to really support what I was doing. So it was a big inflection point in my life, you know, obviously. And I've learned a lot from it over the last couple of years. And that's kind of what's led me to where I'm at today. So,
and so one of the key points, I know you said, when happened to you and everything, is you found out you built your business the wrong way. And, you know, when our business revolves around us and it relies on us day in and day out, it's almost then we're like an employee, we're trapped in our own business.
Right.
And
that's right.
Anything that happens health related or trying to go away for vacations and things like that, it just doesn't work out really well.
That's exactly right, Josh. And for me, it did not work out well. I had to take about 4 months off of work before my surgery for testing and take care of my son and my wife getting ready for an emergency sort of C-section and knowing, you know, it was a pretty severe diagnosis for me and, you know, a lot of challenges there. And then I had to take another 4 months off after work. And, you know, those 4 months were spent in the hospital and in my master bedroom and recovering. I lost 50 pounds and couldn't really work and things like that. But I learned what was interesting, Josh, is we were able to do a couple pretty large real estate transactions while I was out, where in my role in those real estate transactions was on the finance side of the transaction, where I was to recruit and raise and get the private equity and the private money for these particular deals. And I was able to see other people go out and actually be sort of the boots on the ground to actually do the deal, get their hands dirty. And I realized, well, you know, hey, if I could just do that again, that was a relatively small but impactful thing that I was able to contribute to that transaction. And I kind of fell in love with the finance side of real estate. And I fell in love with the finance side and the private equity side and the investment side of business. Not necessarily being the, you know, the boots on the ground in real estate, but being the guy behind the scenes with access to all the capital. And I thought,
sure.
You know what? That's what business owners really need. That's what real estate investors need, is access to money. And that's where I found my niche.
No, that's awesome. And one of the things that we'll have to take a break here in about 2 minutes, but tell me real quick. I mean, as you're dealing with all these challenges, you know, where was your mindset? You know, as entrepreneurs, we hit so many challenges, we fail, we do lots of things. I mean, how did you really work through all that? I mean, supporting, you know, managing the family with your son and your wife, and you know, it's just, and your own health. I mean, that's just.
It was a lot, Josh. It was, you know, it was my own health, my son's health,
right.
My wife's health. It was a failing business. It was, you know, Not that I was really thinking about bankruptcy, but to be honest with you, it became part of the conversation.
Okay.
And that was a scary time after doing a lot of real estate transactions. It just became part of the conversation. And so, you know what I did? A couple things, Josh, is first of all, I realized I had to take care of myself every day. I had to get sleep. I had to rest. I had to meet my doctor's appointments. So there was survival mode.
Right.
And then there was starting to think, like, how do I rebuild my life and what have I learned? And first thing I did was I started really surrounding myself with guys that were successful in business, guys that had already done things successfully, guys that I could just rely on or call in a few favors. And I, you know, a couple of them kind of partnered up with me to help me strategize and write copy and come up with new offers and new things that could help me kind of relaunch myself into my publishing business. And then I started to really become passionate because I saw the impact I could have from a financial perspective. I really started to do my own due diligence and research late at night when I was recovering. I was, you know, just opened up my computer. I started studying private equity. I started learning about the securities laws. I started learning about real estate private equity. And I learned that there are very few people that knew anything about it. And I thought, okay, when I come back and I'm healthy enough to get back to work, this is an area I want to focus on because I knew that's what I enjoyed. So it was really about being self-aware. It was being about self-aware within this giant scope of real estate, Josh. So many things you can do, from you know being a loan officer to commercial to residential to raising capital. So many things I could do. It was really about being self-aware into what I truly loved and finding that little niche where I thought there wasn't a lot of people playing that I could make an impact.
And that's, yeah, definitely. And you definitely hit on some key points I want to jump on when we come right back. So can you stick around for a few minutes?
Absolutely, Josh. You bet.
Awesome. I am Josh Felber. You're watching Making Bank, and we'll be right back. I am Josh Felber. Welcome back to Making Bank. We've been speaking with Josh Cantwell today, talking about his business that was on top of the world and then just all the challenges with his health and his family and everything that he's gone through to get where he is today. And as entrepreneurs, we're not strangers to failure, to challenges day in and day out that we encounter. And I think Josh mentioned a couple key points right before we took a quick break here, is one, he asked for help. I think he reached out and he connected with people that could help him, whether it's with health or with his business, as well as he started to immerse himself in learning and studying what his next level of his business was going to become. And then the third thing was self-awareness. And I think that's very important, especially today, as knowing and being self-aware of what's going on with us and what's around us. So Josh, welcome back to Making Bank.
Hey Josh, thanks again. And it's funny, every time I talk about this and tell the story, it's such an interesting and crazy part of what happened to me that, and I don't really talk about it very often. So it's exciting to be on the show and kind of rekindle what's going on. And the interesting thing is, coming up this November 21st, will be my 5-year anniversary of my surgery, and then I'll officially be cancer-free. So I'll officially be 7%. So thanks a lot. Yeah, I appreciate it.
That's awesome. It takes a special person to break through that 7%, man.
Yeah. You know, I wish I had more to do with it, but it was really my surgeon. And I got to just tell you, his name is Dr. Matthew Walsh at the Cleveland Clinic. Unbelievable guy. And I was told by many other oncologists and surgeons that you basically, you know, pulled a miracle. And so I want to give a quick shout out to him because without him, I wouldn't be here. So
it
wasn't
really
my effort. All I was trying to do was put one step in front of the other, man, and try to recover. It was him and I think God's hand that for me that day. So yep, you bet.
Cool. Awesome. Well, so one of the things you said you were starting to do is really immerse yourself in the learning and starting to figure out this whole fundraising, you know, how to raise money and just, you know, understanding the ins and outs of it. And that's where you've been passionate about. That's what you've just been crushing it on over the last several years. And, you know, tell us a little bit about that, because as entrepreneurs, we always have come into a situation where we may need to raise money for our business at some point.
Yeah. And my business is the business of raising money, because for us, I didn't need money, any more money to fund my own real estate transactions. you know, I've been raising money from private investors for years, and we pay our investors a fixed interest rate or a piece of our profits, whichever is bigger.
Sure.
And so we had no problem recruiting money for that. You know, local friends, local family, people who had IRAs and 401ks, that was great. And then I got to the point where it was like, well, I have this extra money. I have a, you know, $1 million, $2 million of extra capital sitting on the sidelines. And if I don't put this money in play in a real estate transaction soon, these investors, they're going to go do something else with it.
Right.
And that's like a cardinal sin, right? In business, you have access to money. You have to find a way to grow and scale your company. So I'll be honest with you. I just kind of reached out to other people in the real estate space. I reached out to people in my mastermind groups. I reached out to guys in the publishing world and other successful business owners. And I said, you know, who do you know who's in private equity? Who do you know who knows about the securities laws and the securities world? And you know what happened, Josh, is I stumbled into a great securities lawyer, and I started working with him. And I think I pushed him to his limits because I asked so many questions and just went as deep as I could. And then I eventually skipped from him to my current securities lawyer. His name is Joe Carney, and he's actually located down in the Akron-Canton area down by you guys. And Joe really helped me understand everything that needed to go into a private equity offering and all the different opportunities that are out there, from crowdfunding to Reg D, 506B, 506C, Reg A+, all the new things that are out there, especially with the Jobs Act of 2011, 2012. That is huge for business owners. It allows business owners to recruit money from all different kind of places, and so many different angles you can go there. So I just kept asking Joe questions and reading and learning about that, because I knew if there's one thing that real estate professionals need is access to capital. And the guy who has the capital is really the guy that's always going to be popular, that's always going to be the man. And so I wanted to be that guy. And so I've been studying that and perfecting my craft for the last 4 years or so.
Cool. And I know one of the things you even mentioned too, a couple of things, was mentors. I mean, you reached out and you had people that you utilized as a mentor or as a coach in some way. And I think that's one of the similar traits I seem to find with successful entrepreneurs, is they've either had a mentor or a business coach in some way to help them grow and push them to continue this, move their business forward. And then crowdfunding, I think, you know, one of the new hot things right now is crowdfunding. And I see a lot of businesses utilizing that in some way to, I guess, raise funds for their business.
Right. Yeah. So to your first point, Josh, about mentorship, you know, I've grown up with mentors. To me, it was just natural. I never had to be convinced that I should get a mentor, and if I didn't have one, I should go find one, or if I should pay for one.
Yeah.
I've always just told myself it was natural to me. I grew up where, when I was very young, my dad used to go to, you know, Brian Tracy seminars. Yeah. And you know, he would go see and listen to the University on Wheels. And so when I was in high school, my dad would drive me to school, we would listen to those old Brian Tracy tapes. And so I just knew when I was 14, 15, my dad was a successful entrepreneur. He owned an insurance agency and did employee benefits. It was just something I grew up with. So I knew that was part of the thing. So when I got into real estate in 2004 full-time and didn't know much about it, you know, I was not afraid. In my first full year in real estate, I spent well over $100,000 on my real estate education, signing up for coaching, signing up for mentoring, going to seminars, learning from people, to the point, Josh, today where I, you know, I'll have a hard time with my three little kids really committing to a higher level of college education, because I learned so much more from seminars and mastermind groups and the Weekend Warrior seminar, you know, thing than I did from college. So I think mentors, for sure, number one, the big piece of it is they've already been there, done that. Number two, they can introduce you to people who, even if they're not in your niche, can introduce you to have so much of a bigger appreciation of what's possible, right?
Yes,
I think those are the two things, is learning up. You know, I read something just this morning on Facebook. You know, if you have five friends who are millionaires, you're going to be the sixth. If you have five friends who are influential, you're going to be the sixth. You have five friends who are idiots, or they're broke or bankrupt, you're going to be the sixth, right? So it's really about who you associate with. That was a big part of who I am and what I strive to be today. And, you know, you and I get to participate in mastermind groups together. It's fantastic. It's a huge part, I think, no matter what level somebody's at, to really be a part of a mastermind. The crowdfunding thing, Josh, is, you know, is amazing. And there's a million different angles we can go with that. So.
No, yeah. And I mean, what, you know, so say, you know, you're talking to an entrepreneur out there and they're trying to figure out they need to inject some capital in their business. I mean, is crowdfunding the way to go? Or is that more kind of for a startup product or what, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. So crowdfunding, the way most people are thinking of it, is still in the donation primary phase where people come up with a product.
Right.
And, you know, for the most part, if you want to fund like a GoFundMe campaign, people are donating money. They're not necessarily getting equity. That's this next rollout, this next phase, right?
Okay.
But for real estate, and what's interesting is going back all the way to 1933, 1934, the Securities Acts of 1933 and 1934 were created because guys like us, like take a guy who like us who's maybe not as honest as us and is a guy who kind of, you know, back then was always, you know, kind of cutting corners and screwing people over. What would happen back then, and part of the Great Depression was started because guys were selling 100% stakes in their business to multiple people and were skipping state lines. So if you did it in Ohio, they would then skip to Indiana or skip to Michigan.
Sure.
And it was regulated state by state. So they could just move to a different state, sell a 600% stake in their business, and nobody could pursue them. So 1933, 1934, regulation of securities became a national federal thing. And for the past 80 years, they've had this 506B offering where you could raise money for any business, including real estate like mine, and you could raise money from anybody you wanted, an unlimited amount of money, but you had to raise it from people who you had a prior existing relationship with.
Okay.
Not do a general solicitation or an advertisement.
Okay.
You cannot solicit the general public. Well, now in my business in real estate, what's great is the Jobs Act of 2011, 2012 now allows for general solicitation. So there's many different ways using the Jobs Act to legally go out and recruit private equity for a fund or for a business and solicit the general public. Now there's one caveat. The caveat to that is you can only accept money from accredited investors.
Sure.
And accredited investors is only 9% of the population in the United States. So if you solicit and put out a bunch of great advertisements or put together great funnels, you're going to get 10 leads and only one out of the 10 are you really going to be able to work with. So you have to know your numbers. You have to know what the conversion rates of your funnels are.
Right.
And one or two investors that you get has to convert and has to be worth it for your business, right? So for us, that's what it's all about. We actually have both a 506B where we can recruit and raise money from people we have existing relationships with. And we have a 506C registration, which allows us to advertise. But in that case, we can only take money from people who are accredited.
Okay. And so, you know, what I guess, what are the keys of finding the right people? Because you hear about like, oh, friends and family and round A and all these different things. You know, what are the keys to really attract people to, you know, make an investment in what you're doing?
Yeah, I think, first of all, number one, if you're going to be raising private money or private equity of any kind, you have to be able to articulate your opportunity to investors in 30 to 60 seconds.
Okay.
You have to be able to tell them what is your business opportunity and why they should invest in your opportunity in 1 minute or less. You know, for me, I tell people we raise private capital from private investors. We recruit money into our private equity fund and we make investment loans to real estate investors and we produced double-digit fixed returns for our investors because we originate notes and mortgages with fixed double-digit returns. It's pretty straightforward.
Right.
For us, it's really simple. But you have to be able to articulate that very quickly in 1 minute or less. I think the second big key is for investors, you have to be able to articulate why you and your team are the team to get the job done.
Ah, okay.
Why are you qualified not to just get the money and have a great business model, but why is your team the team or why are you the person to scale and grow the business, right? So no matter what niche you're in, you have to be able to convince that person that you're the guy, you're the gal, or we're the executive team that's going to take this thing to the next level. That's a big part of it. And then, you know, third piece, because it's not really about the offer, Josh. It's not really, you know, people are getting offers every day to invest in businesses. They're getting offers every day to get double-digit returns.
Right.
So why are you the guy? Why is your business the business to invest in 1 minute or less? Why is you and your team the thing to invest in 1 minute or less? And then the third piece is how fast are they going to get their principal back?
Right.
Right? Because in this day and age, it's not always about how much am I going to make. It's about how am I going to get my principal back? And then people want to basically play with house money. They want to play with house money, meaning let's say they invest $500,000 in your business. When are they going to get the $500,000 back? And then the equity they leave in your business, that's the house money that they're playing with.
Right. Okay.
If you can structure an offer where you can say, here's what we do in 1 minute or less. Here's why you should trust me and my executive team in 1 minute or less. And here's when you're going to get your principal back. So then you're playing with house money. That gives you a really good opportunity to get your foot in the door and potentially get an investment.
Gotcha. That makes sense. And, you know, I think for the audience, you know, especially a lot of people have watched Shark Tank and stuff. So, you know, they see in the sharks on there, they ask like, hey, you know, how fast am I going to get my money back? You hear Robert and Kevin. Those are their questions all the time. Cuban, he doesn't really care. So he just puts it in. All right, let's just make some money and grow something cool.
You know what's interesting too, Josh, is the international investor, the non-US investor.
Right.
That's even more prevalent, what I found, because I've worked with investors from the Southeast Asia markets and the Western European markets and the Australian markets. That's always their first question. In the U.S., it seems like, what am I going to get in interest?
Right.
Because we're kind of used to things going well.
Right.
We're a little bit spoiled. It's like, I know I'm going to get my principal back. So how much interest am I going to earn? How much profit? How much equity?
Sure.
Investors from all over the world, the other parts, they're not used to things going so well. They're not used to things going as well as we are in the U.S. So their first question is always, when and how quickly will I get my principal back? And how quickly can I play with house money?
Awesome. Yeah, it definitely makes sense. Tell me, I guess, two business success strategies that have worked really well for you over the years.
Yeah, I think, Josh, you know, the number one thing that's probably made me successful is being able to understand what I can say no to.
Right. Okay.
Because I think when you're to a certain level of success, it's not whether you're going to have opportunity come across your desk. It's what you say yes to and what you say no to. And I think I've learned over the past couple of years, especially, to ask even more difficult questions, to ask even more insightful questions, not be so excited about every opportunity that comes across my desk, and not to spread myself too thin. Right. We just had this conversation with my team on Friday about what are we going to get rid of? What are we going to stop doing? Because I felt like my executive team was getting a little bit too thin and we were getting away from some of our core, right?
Yeah.
So that would be number one is what are you going to get rid of? What are you going to stop doing? Don't be so excited about jumping into anything. Focus on just one or two really cool and really important things that are impactful. Second business strategy for me, which is might sound very basic, but what I do in business has to have balance and it has to work within my family structure. You know, being an entrepreneur provides and creates pressures on a family, on a marriage, on kids, on family relationships that you just don't see in any part of the world. And I've learned, you know, I've been married for 10 years and my wife and I have had wild conversations about business and what works and what doesn't work. But for me, what works in my business has to work inside of my family.
Sure.
And I've learned some amazing lessons in the past couple of years that, you know, I think I was in survival mode coming out of recovering from cancer where I was just trying to make it back.
Right.
And when I made it back, it was about, oh, wow, look at me. I can make it back. I can be successful at anything. And then it got to the point where, no, man, like, let's make sure that the opportunities that we select, they work for what I want to do with my health, what I want to do with my fitness. Am I going to have time for that? Am I still going to be able to be the father and the husband that I want to be? And am I going to have the time to think and strategize and be with my team? I don't want to be in a business where I just have to hump it and grind it out for 10, 12, 15 hours a day to be successful.
Right.
I want to be in a business where I can think and deploy what I think is going to be work well. And it's got to work within my family structure or it does not work in business for me.
Definitely, dude. That's some awesome information. I mean, I think we, like you said, we have so many opportunities that come across the desk. And even, you know, it's sometimes starting out as a new entrepreneur, you think, oh, I got to say yes to everything. Got to say yes to everything. And it feels like you have to. But, you know, setting that those boundaries and those guidelines for yourself will help you become, hit that next level of success faster, I think, as well. So,
and you know what, Josh? I'll tell you a funny story, a quick story. When I was recovering and I was coming back from cancer, I was looking for, you know, what I was going to do, and I was looking and evaluating all different kind of things. I was even thinking about getting out of the real estate business and looking at some other things. And, you know, I was able to find and create one offer in my real estate publishing company that took our business from negative cash flow, bleeding, literally verge of bankruptcy, one offer, to switching that to a multi-million dollar, you know, $4 or $5 million a year revenue business within 2 years with one offer.
Wow.
Because that offer spurned off an upsell, another upsell, a cross sell, and some other opportunities. So it wasn't really about how many different things I can create or how many different things I can chase to plug the hole, right, where all the money was sliding out the bottom of my life and my business. It was really about selecting one thing that I thought was congruent with who I was and what I wanted to do and what was good for my family, and being passionate about that one offer and that one thing, because we were passionate about it and we chased it and we chased it and we chased it. It literally helped me completely write the course of my financial life and create balance in my personal life, gave me a lot of confidence, and it was really one thing. So I got rid of all the other 10 or 20 or 30 opportunities. I picked one. I chased it day and night for a couple of years. It completely changed my life for the future. And then it launched me into the private equity space as well.
Awesome. All right, man. Last question is, what's one piece of technology you can't live without?
Oh, great question. So one piece of technology we can't live without. This might sound very basic, but you know, we use a Basecamp tool for planning in our business, our publishing company. You know, we use Basecamp for all different kind of things there. It allows all of our business to plug in. It allows my marketing team to plug in with projects and funnels. It allows my operations team to plug in and see everything that's going on. Whereas before, I used to rely on a lot of conversation back and forth, what's going on between marketing and ops and finance and accounting. So I think for some people, it's as simple as adopting one piece of software. And for us, it's just basic business planning and department management, calendar management, that we can't live without. We're not super tech savvy, but that one tool helps quite a bit.
Keeps everything running smooth.
That's right. You got
it. Well, Josh, it's been an honor to have you on Making Bank today and sharing your insights and your struggles and your successes and everything. And so thanks again for coming on Making Bank.
I appreciate it, Josh. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it a lot.
I am Josh Felber. You are watching Making Bank. Get out and be extraordinary.